Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
Early in my career, I look at myself as an investor in people. A huge reason why I do what I do is because I have a real passion for helping others and giving back and making a difference.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Amaro Morgan, assistant coach at the University of Tennessee.
Morgan's basketball journey began as a player at Idaho State before continuing professionally in Europe, and he has since built an impressive coaching resume with stops at Illinois Springfield, Our Lady of the Lake, Henderson State, Nichols State, South Alabama, Loyola Chicago, Cal, and now Tennessee. His experience across multiple levels has helped shape his perspective on recruiting, player development, and program building. In this episode, we discuss how starting at lower levels helped him grow long-term as a coach, what he looks for before taking a position on a new staff, what he now evaluates differently as a recruiter compared to earlier in his career, and why Tennessee has sustained success for so many years under Coach Rick Barnes.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Your host, Al Major, Doug Caputo here. We are excited to talk some hoops, chop it up with the assistant coach, the University of Tennessee, Amaro Morgan. Coach Morgan, welcome.
How's it going? Appreciate you all having me on. Super excited to be here. I've been a big fan of the podcast for some time now, so fired up about the call.
We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
No, we're excited. I want to say one thing for everybody to note too. You've had a great experience, or I should say, I don't want to speak for you, but great background as to what you have done so far. A lot of success. You've worked your way up the chain. So I think a lot of people can learn from what you have done. That being said, you've coached at almost every level, right? Division II, NAIA, all the way now working your way up to the SEC with, of course, some stuff in between. You're playing, you had a professional playing career, so you saw the other side of the ball too. But where we dive into the most, and I think might be pretty good to learn from, is once your playing career had ended, you're done with Europe, you come back over to the States, you get into coaching. Everybody always asks, what was that NBA moment like when you first get into the NBA? And what was your first coaching moment? Did you have a welcome to coaching? What surprised you the most? What was there anything like challenging that you feel you faced early on?
Yeah, it has been a great experience, just to let you know. It's been an incredible story. And I've taken none of the routes are traditional, but mine, I would say, has been non-traditional for sure. And I think that first moment for me where it was like surreal that I'm actually on the sideline, on the other side, doing something different, was the guy who recruited me and coached me, and Jeff Alexander, who is now an assistant coach at Illinois. We played them in an exhibition game. I was a D2 assistant making graduate pay at the University of Illinois at Springfield, and we played at Evansville. And first game, I'm like, I'm playing against a guy that coached me, recruited me, developed me for 4 years. I have on a suit. He has on a suit. I'm like, this is crazy. And it was great. It was actually pretty cool as well, because our head coach at the time, Ben Weirs, but he came from that coaching tree. And it was just interesting to just see like game prep and what goes into it from that side, because we ran the exact same system that they ran. Our plays were called the exact same things. And we were just over there just trying to figure it out and play a chess match. The strategy that we love as young coaches. So it was great for me just to see that. And afterwards, it's funny, man, Jeff Alexander, who's my guy, like I love him to death. He actually had a tailor come by, because he was like, man, the suit that you had on was not stylish enough. You know what it's like when you're making $800 a month and you're trying to piece it together for the first time. And he had a tailor actually come up to the school and measure me and fit me, and I'm forever grateful for that, for sure.
No, trust me. When you get that first one, you don't want to go back to JCPenney, man. Yeah, honestly. No, I'm telling you. No, I get it. Yeah. There was a guy on our – I coached Xavier back in the day, and somebody on our staff, he had a relationship with the tailor, and she came in and took care of everybody. And it is not the same, that's for sure, man.
At all.
Yeah. At all. But no, we actually – Jeff is a target I've been working on to get on the pod. So this is great because I'm going to use you as ammunition.
I'll make it happen. That's my guy right there. Great dude, man. Unbelievable coach. And
yes, he has
become an elite recruiter for sure.
Absolutely.
I can say I was his first all conference guy that he ever signed at the division right. level, though.
Nice. So,
there we go.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, he was one of your inspirations. Was there anybody else along the way? Because it's funny, we have former players on here, especially guys that were pros, whether it's NBA or European experience. One of two things, they either always knew they wanted to get into coaching, or it was a no way in hell am I ever going to be a coach, and then they somehow end up doing it anyway. Which one of those were you? Because it's crazy how that happens on here. But and some guys, we had Deshaun Butler with the Celtics, and he was coached by his dad, and he always knew he'd be a coach. He just, when his career was over. So what was that for you? Did you always know, or was it a no way in hell? And then like the Godfather 3, every time I try to get out, they pull me back in.
Yeah, I say it was a little bit of all of that. I would say as a player, I was locked in, tunnel focus, singular focus on reaching the ultimate goal is what every young player wants to do is be a pro and make the NBA. I thought I was going to be playing basketball until I was 60. I had no idea. You would hear people say, yeah, the ball is going to stop at some point and the importance of getting your degree and things of that sort. But just the same, like I'm a big believer in the power of one. And I'm going to say Jeff Alexander's name again, right? There aren't always tons of people that will give the recommendation that they say. There'll be tons of people that say, hey, if you need anything, please don't hesitate to reach out. But there's only a few. And in this instance, I'm saying one that did everything he could do to help me break into this space. And he made a phone call for me and helped me get in. And he told me when I was a young player that, man, you'll be a really good coach one day. And I'm looking at him like, when? I have no one. What are you talking about, be a really good coach? He was a young assistant at the time. And I was a team captain at Idaho State for multiple years. And I had the leadership traits. They used to utilize me all the time on the recruiting visits. I was always the host. So I somewhat got an inside look at that, which and was kind of been a seamless transition on that end as I jumped into this space as a coach. But he really helped me. He helped me see and understand that, okay, there's a way you can have a lucrative lifestyle, not only as a player, but also as a coach. And then just having the mentors that I've had from the past and being from Memphis, Tennessee, some of those guys who like really helped me, just being there for me every step of the way. Anytime I would pick up the phone, it kind of just made me want to be a servant and made me want to always want to impact the next wave, the next group of young players, and not only young players, young coaches. I try to be as available for them as I can and help them because I know I was once them at one point.
Now, you just hit the nail on the head of what this whole thing should be about, man, is just take somebody with you, whatever that looks like. Or if you can't take them with you, help them move along. And so, no, that's great. That's great. I was really curious about that because it's just funny how that story, when people talk about whether they always wanted to do it or no way in the world. But it takes one person sometimes just to trigger something like that.
So, yeah, there another story, a really close friend of mine at Jordan Mincy. He's the head coach at JU, Jacksonville University, who's done a great job down there. Just seeing him, he was actually, I think at the time when we were both finishing up in school, he was the youngest Division I assistant in the country. He was an assistant at, I think he got his first job at Kent State. And I decided I wanted to go play. And I went over to the Netherlands and went over to Germany. And I just watched him ascend so quickly, right? I watched him go from being a GA at South Carolina to being a full-time assistant at Kent State and Charleston, University of Charleston. And then from there, he just kind of like moved on really quickly. So now he's a head coach. He's an SEC assistant. I think by 28 years old, so seeing him move as quickly as he did, it kind of gave me some perspective and outlook. Okay, there is a different way for me to impact the game and be around the game and still do what I love. Not being able to, maybe not with the sweat and sweat equity as a player, but I can actually give back. So picking his brain every day and asking him what he thought about it, and he really enjoyed his time as a young assistant. That was another reason why I decided to go ahead and jump into this space.
Love it. Love it.
It always gets you. I tell everybody all the time, like I've seen some of my current players or former players, and I told them, I said, you're going to be a coach. And they're like, no, I'm not. I have no aspirations to get into it. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's a drug. It'll pull you in. You never want to do it. But the hardest part, going back to like your ending your playing career and then getting into coaching, the toughest part I personally had was those first couple times during warmups, those first couple games, the music starts playing, the fans start pouring in, and you're sitting there and you're like, someone throw me a ball. I got to go up for a layup, but you're standing jumping in the middle around. Of the court with your, yep. It's just, for sure. it's hard to turn it off and then be on the other side. Granted, with your tailored suit on then at that point. Yep. But one thing I want to make sure to highlight too, is like, as we said, you grew from the NAIA and Division II to now being in the SEC. A lot of people have those aspirations of being a Division III assistant. Like, I feel like a lot of times people get maybe like the lower tier Division II, Division III, get more of a bad rep and they don't want to necessarily go into those.
Yeah.
So just talk a little bit about like, maybe what did you learn in those early positions that helped really set you up for where you are now and to get to where you are?
Yeah, I would say I learned how to become a jack of all trades. I learned how to operate with a sense of humility really quick. I know my first job is crazy to say. There was one weekend as a full-time assistant basketball coach. I was at the Division II level where you got to wear so many hats. I was actually driving the tennis team to their tournament. You know what I mean? And it's like, what did I just sign up for? I could have continued to keep playing. But then my second job at the NAIA level, I was actually the full-time strength coach. I remember when the head coach brought me in and he was like, okay, so this is the regimen that we'll do every morning at 6 a.m. And it's so funny. I talked to a couple of my former players now. They actually thought I was pretty good at it. And I was like, no idea what I'm doing. I'm putting these dudes through a 45-minute workout, conditioning workout, med balls, probably something that you wouldn't even be able to do nowadays. Just destroying them, right, which was great. But then at the same time that evening, I was washing the jerseys, putting those up, hanging those up for the next day. So I had a chance early in my career to not only be an assistant, be the director of basketball operations, run camp. And that just taught me tons of humility, but it also sharpened me to the point where when I've gotten to these levels, there hadn't really been anything I hadn't touched. So at this point in my career, delegation is very important and helping these managers and helping these young coaches and support staff. And I know exactly what to do, exactly what to tell them for them to be successful and for everything to run the way that it needs to run. So I would say that's what I was taught early on, and it's helped me become a much better coach over time.
Yeah, well, the key word there you said is humility, man, because now if somebody that's maybe been able to get to your point at a spot like Tennessee or just a high major in general, and maybe never having done some of those things, you can lose two things with those roles that if you've never had a chance to do them, you can lose the humility, of course, because you never had to do them. And you don't appreciate those young hustlers and runners and people just with their job titles or quote unquote, whatever. You don't appreciate them if you've never been them.
For sure.
So the fact that you have been them, you know exactly what they need. You know exactly how to handle their mistakes, right? You're not jumping all over them because you've been them, which means you've made some of those same mistakes.
You made those mistakes.
Yeah, right. Some of the food order didn't get right or whatever it is. Yep. Right?
Absolutely.
You've been there. So there's an appreciation. And then all those humility plus appreciation creates empathy.
Absolutely.
So now you're empathetic for what they're dealing with. And if they have a bad day, you've been right there before. And sometimes they just, in those roles, all they need is a, hey, you're good.
Absolutely. Because
they're trying to get everything right. And in the process of just trying to get everything right, something gets caught in the fray. And they just every now and then, the support staff, the best thing they can hear is, hey, we're good. Don't worry about it. We're good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having had to be as your offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, recruiting coordinator, director of basketball operations, having to basically wear all these hats because there's not nearly the manpower that what we have now. I was the only assistant, and we had another voluntary guy that might come in and out whenever his family allowed him to. So with that being said, I had a lot of freedom, and the coaches that I work for, I really appreciate them because they sharpen me. But not only did they sharpen me, they allowed me to take some things and run with it. If I wanted to develop the guys, they allowed me to do it the way I need it. And it's helped me become the young coach that I've become.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, obviously, like I said, I'm still at the Division III level, and I really enjoy it. But then Mage started at the Division III level, worked his way up to be a Division I assistant and Division I head coach. So it's like, and he's a, I don't want to speak for him, but a story very similar, right? Worked his way up, and it's one of those things where it's definitely obvious that you can learn different things at the lower levels, but then everybody has those aspirations to get to the Division I NBA levels. Right. But you mentioned the coaches that you have worked for, how they've helped sharpen you. If I'm not mistaken, you've had about 8 different places where you've been an assistant where you have grown through. And the reason I bring that up is because there's a lot of things that go into looking at that next spot. Of course, whether that's knowing the connections, knowing the people that you're going to be stepping into. One, whether you have connections or not. Let me ask, before you take that next position, before you go to that next spot, what are some of the things that you look at with the staff, whether you know the coaches or not? Like, you look holistically over the program, the coaches, the path that they've had. What are some things that you look at before you take that next spot, knowing that great, those coaches can help you?
Yeah, great question. First off, I would say assess the situation that I'm currently in, whether it's a healthy situation, whether it's a good situation for my family, my wife, whether she's enjoying her time, whether she has community as well. And if we, where I currently am, have the resources for us to win. My goal is to be a head coach and at some point in time. And because of our competitive juices, obviously we're competitors. And at the end of the day, we want to win in whatever we do. I've been lucky enough to kind of be in some places where, you know, now it's considered to be a place that's a half. But I've also been in some places where we had to do more with less, right? And that being Nicholls State, that being Henderson State. But early on in my career, just letting you know, the part of the reason why I moved around as much as I did is just because I was kind of like taking what I could get, right? I wanted to play Division I basketball. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. How on God's green earth did I end up in Idaho? I wanted to play Division I basketball. I got a full ride, and I was willing to travel all the way across the country to do so. And once I made up my mind to be a college basketball coach, it didn't matter the level for me. I wanted to break into the space. I decided to go ahead and jump in, not making much money. My next decision, I actually made some pretty good money. But my goal was is to get back to the level where I played, which is Division I. And at that point, I've been a little bit more calculated in the decisions that I made. But being with Richie Riley down at Nicholls, being in one of those spots where we had to do more with less, that place is a special place. We love it, but it's not known to have tons of resources, if I'm being completely honest. And we were able to, in year two of his deal, and it was my first year there, we were able to win a conference championship, which led to him getting a better opportunity at South Alabama. And immediately there, we had to hit the ground running. I was actually the only assistant from that staff that went with him to South Alabama. There was another support staff member that came with us. Being in that situation, I had to immediately learn how to being the guy in the background to actually being the guy, that knows his expectation of culture. And then knowing that, okay, I'm probably the one that's going to need to protect it. And how am I going to protect it every day? Making sure that I'm talking to him, making sure we're on the same page, and making sure that the new staff members know what the expectation is and why we had success at our previous spot. And then after that, some of the things that kind of led to me moving around was just, okay, I've helped Richie. I helped him rebuild the South Alabama situation. Now I want something what's better for me and wanted to make the NCAA tournament. And that was the reason why I chose to move on to Loyola Chicago. And that place was incredible. Drew Valentine is a really good coach. What Porter Mosier was able to establish there, I think, was incredible. That was the first time I actually seen a culture that was like foolproof from top to bottom. And coming from a situation where we recruited a ton of talent, that was like the first time me realizing that, hey, you can have talent and culture and be able to get it done. It doesn't have to be one or the other. So just as time went in my career, I always tried to just evaluate my current situation and then also look at what's out there in front of me and who is the guy that I could potentially be working with and learning from. And now I'm working for a Hall of Famer. I mean, it was one that I couldn't turn down. Not only that, he's an even better person. And that was a huge reason why I made a decision to leave Florida State in such a quick period of time. I knew that he runs a faith-driven program. I knew that he's an unbelievable person. I know that Dez Oliver told me when he saw me, first thing he said to me is, man, Coach Barnes, he cares about people, man. I'm telling you that. Like, some people say that they do, but he lives it. Like, he's going to do everything he can to try to help you. If your goal is to be a head coach, he's going to make sure he plays his part and does what he needs to do to help prepare you for that. So I always try to be calculated in my decisions, but I do think winning has led to me moving on. But not only winning, I also wanted to get closer to home as well.
Yeah. The first one sometimes leads to everything else. And it's a little bit more of an old school approach, but like we tell players, when you win, they come looking for everybody.
Yeah.
That I still think that travels in this business. And again, there's some things that maybe accelerate moves now. There's a time where coaches really didn't have agents. And yeah. Now, if you don't have an agent as a coach now, you're almost like, But I was probably a little bit more of a dinosaur. It took me forever to have an agent, but I tried to lean on winning, to let winning be my agent.
For sure. And that's been my focus. Everywhere that I've been, I tried to make a lasting impact. I've tried to help the guy. Like, every time I walked in the door, my huge focus was trying to make sure I did my part to ascend them, elevate them, help them get to whatever their ultimate goal is. And by doing that, part of moving on to these different spots, you're being pursued, like you just said. You're receiving phone calls, and just as many spots as I've been to, I've turned down more.
No doubt.
And always looking for the right one. And I truly feel that I found the right one. I think that everything about the Tennessee program, about what Coach Barnes has built and established here, is everything that I'm about. So I'm just locked in on trying to help him make that Final Four, win a national championship, and trying to make sure whatever he needs behind the scenes gets done.
Yeah, I tell you what, just to take a brief detour here to talk about obviously you, but then obviously let's really talk about Tennessee just for a hot second, because unless you're living on a different planet, Tennessee may have as long a history of sustained success in the past 10 years, 10 to 15 years, as anybody. And this is, I'm not sure what year this is for Coach. This has got to be 12 years.
Yep.
Yeah. So talking in the past 10 years, at least. But what a run, man, that he's been on. And he's been the one staple, because he's had a lot of turnover, and for a good reason, staff-wise.
Guys leaving there,
as we just missed Justin Gainey, but there's been others.
Kim English. Yeah, absolutely. Chris Ogden.
Yeah, just keep on going. But talk about just a day in the life of Tennessee basketball, being around Coach Barnes, just from the standpoint of, again, the word culture gets beat up, because sometimes it doesn't really get described very well. But what does it feel? Culture, I think, is when you get someplace and you feel what you're around every day. Just when you walk in the building and you guys' facility and Coach Barnes is around, what's that feeling of just being around him every day that helps lay the foundation for what's happening on the court? Because it's a classic. It's a classic program of winning from the inside out.
Yeah, for sure. Coach Barnes is an old school ball coach, right? He loves basketball. He's always in the gym. Loves being in the gym still to this day. Loves the player development side of this thing still to this day. One thing we say in our program is there's one guy in our program that does not have a bad day, and it's crazy that he's doing it. He's 71 years old. It's Coach Barnes. He shows up with the exact same energy. He shows up demanding the exact same way. It doesn't matter what he's going through, no matter what has happened, no matter what's going on at home, he shows up and he makes sure he gives our guys everything that he has. And because of his standard, because he's so consistent, because of his level of consistency that he puts on display every day, we know that we can't fall short. So when we walk into this building,
that's a great point.
We're as organized as we possibly can be. We're ready to go for these individual workouts. We know what the expectation is. He's calling us the night before practice, the night after practice, just trying to make sure that if he didn't feel our guys are in good mental headspaces or they maybe misunderstood something, he's always making sure that we're touching these guys, reaching out to these guys, caring for these guys, loving these guys. This program itself, you hear the coaches tell the players, I love you. and hear the staff members tell each other, I love you more than any place that I've ever been. And I think what's cool about it is he's been fortunate enough because he's won enough, but also there's tons of guys that want to be a part of his staff. He's put together year in and year out, incredible staffs of and incredible people. He's gonna, just the same as we say we don't recruit any knuckleheads or we don't take any low character guys as players. That goes the same as coaches. So the staff that he's put together, we have an extremely seasoned staff. When you talk about Greg Polinsky, who spent 23 years in the NBA in significant roles, you talk in who was once a Division I head coach, who you probably know, and Steve McClain, two-time Division I head coach, and Justin Ganey, who was just here. Now we have Earl Grant, Brian Lentz, who has been with him for years, been around the game, does an incredible job. These guys, they never put their ego out in front of what we're trying to accomplish as a unit. And I've been places where you got young and up and coming guys and everybody's trying to get to the top. And you know what I mean? Sometimes you might step on each other's toes. Like right now, it's one thing we say, our mantra, our one thing we live by in our program is Enom. It's not about me. And that's a real thing. It's a real thing. Like we pour into these dudes. We invest in these players. And I think it's a huge reason why he's had so much success, not only with winning, but like 35 NBA draft picks, 30-plus, 50-plus NBA guys that have played in the NBA. We talk about it all the time. Like these aren't – you got the Kevin Durants and the Nate Mintz and LaMarcus Aldridges, but you also have the P.J. Tuckers and you also have the Royal Ivies and you also have the Grant Williams that were under-recruited. So, and this stuff isn't happening by accident. This is happening because – the standard is set really high every single day. And then on top of that, the culture is really strong. We have great people in our program. Our players are great people and they all want to accomplish the same thing. And he's gotten this thing to the point where they care about Tennessee basketball. You know what I mean? They care about the University of Tennessee. They care about the guys that were before them. When you look at Jacoby Gillespie, did not want to let down Zakai Ziegler. You know what I mean? And that's what you want in your program. And it's going to be the same for this next wave. Like, they're not going to want to let down what some of these guys have built. I'm super fortunate to be here. I'm learning every day from these dudes and excited about the season to come for sure.
Yeah, no, that you just hit on the head what it means to care about the logo over the ego.
Yeah,
for sure.
And what trips up programs sometimes, you can still have some success.
Yeah.
What can trip up a program from being even greater is that this when individual egos start getting bigger than the logo.
For sure.
And guys start figuring out, how can I make this work for me versus
absolutely
how can I help the big guy?
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So we could do a whole pod series on it. So we're not going to do that.
No doubt.
We're not going to do that today. But that's a big one for me in our business. It's a big one.
I was going to say, even going back to what you were saying too, sorry, Mage, but like recruiting the players, right? You recruit the players that you don't just see a kid, see the numbers, see the stats and be like, all right, let's get this kid. You do your homework. You go on the back end, you look to see how good of a kid he is. And then exactly to your point, there's a reason why the assistants that you have had have grown so much, or I should say the assistants that Coach Barnes has had over the years. Because it's the same story. You don't just hire an assistant because, okay, this guy has some great X's and O's. Like, will he conform to what you're trying to do? Is he willing to speak the way you're speaking, right? Like, we're all in this together and everybody is willing to conform, because if the head coach does it, the assistants fall in line, then the players fall in line. It's like a little triangle, right? The top of the triangle is the head coach. As it spirals down, it goes wider and wider, but it encompasses everybody. So it's great information. It definitely says a lot too.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I'm getting a chance to sit in someone that's been a head coach in this space for 40 plus years at the highest level, right? It's hard to do. I'm watching, I'm witnessing every single day why and how this thing has happened. And it's pretty cool to see, as some people might say, okay, he's on the back end. Like, if he wasn't 71 years old, and you walked into our facility, you would not think he was on the back end. Like, you're only saying that because of his age, not because of his energy, not because of his energy level, not because of how much he cares, not because of how locked in he is to what's going on emotionally with our players, skillfully with our players. Like, it's incredible for him to be able to still show up every single day and be as consistent as he's been. It's been awesome to witness.
Yeah, and that's why, especially in our profession, sometimes age can get overblown, right? Because your real age is your energetic age.
Yeah.
It's not your numerical age.
Mm-hmm.
And coach's energetic age is 41.
Absolutely.
His real age is 71.
Absolutely.
His day-to-day energetic age and his emotional age. His
personality, too.
His care factor age, he's 41.
His personality, too. He's younger than me with his personality. All the practical jokes he does around his place. He's the best.
I've heard. I don't know if we can do it, but we got to get him on at some point.
Because
we'd have to do a two-piece. We'd have to do a two-piece with a biscuit with him. We'd have to do a part A and part B.
Coach.
But sure. I'm so glad you're saying some of the things you're saying, because I don't want people listening to get so caught up in this guy's at Tennessee and miss the why behind the curtain.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
Why we're kind of asking you some of this stuff that, you know, and you've done a beautiful job of lifting the hood on this, man. And that's what I want people to see, why the engine's running.
Yep.
Don't just listen to the roar. The engine has been roaring for a while at that point.
Oh, for sure.
But today, about lifting the hood and saying, okay, why are these gears running like a machine the way they are? And
I love
the way you said something, because that's what young assistants can't miss.
Yeah,
right? They can't miss recruiting guys that fit your head coach. Don't miss
absolutely
that.
Cannot
don't miss being a staff connection, and how if the staff is connected, the players don't just see it, they feel it, then they want to mirror it.
Yeah. Right?
Because their attitude reflects leadership, so they're going to mirror and they're going to try to copy what they see. They're still kids.
Absolutely.
And I hope all that you've been saying really sticks with the people that are going to be listening to this, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah.
And we're chopping up a little bit about bringing people into the program, recruiting in essence, right? The coaches, but even from your perspective as an assistant coach, you got to go out recruiting. I know nowadays the portal is still something that is extremely relevant, but then of course, maybe you go out and get some high school kids. It doesn't matter where you're getting them from. Has there been anything you have learned? Let me rephrase that. I'm sure there has been many things that you have learned on the recruiting. What all have you have learned up on the recruiting side about making sure you're getting the right guys? Because as we said, you don't want to go out and just get guys who have fantastic numbers, fantastic film, or whatever it might be. Like, what are some things that maybe on the back end players or coaches don't understand? This is what we look at as well.
Yeah, I think when you jump into the coaching profession, you're just trying to sign a player a lot of times. And you're looking at how good the player is, how talented the player is, and you're not necessarily looking at it from a holistic approach. And I would say early in my career, I think I've had a lot of success with pretty good matches, right? Because I've always valued character. Just being a leader of our program at Idaho State, I got a chance to pay close attention to the reasons when we had success and the reasons we didn't have success. So I've always valued that, because I've been been fortunate even throughout my high school days to have won a ton. So getting a chance to see what that looks like somewhat helped me. But I can tell you, when I walked in the door at Loyola Chicago after leaving South Alabama, I would say their roster was probably the most impressive thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was funny. One of the assistants, Sean Dwyer, we were on staff together. He's actually now an assistant with the Phoenix Suns. He does an incredible job. And Drew used to kind of get on us a little bit about asserting yourself, and that's something we always have to do. But we were just amazed with just the culture that they had established and the culture that they had built. We had, and it kind of allowed me to realize that I thought of myself as a player. I thought I was a high character guy. I thought I was really competitive. I thought I was very passionate. I thought I loved basketball. I thought I loved to work. I thought I cared about winning. And sometimes you think as coaches that you can't have a team full of that. sometimes you feel early in your career that you have to sacrifice some of those things for talent. And when I walked in the door there, that was the first time I was like, man, like I can actually put together a team full of me. I can actually do it. It's not easy to do, but you can actually do it. I'm looking at Lucas Williamson and Hear You Guac, those guys on that team who had been to a Final Four, who had been to a Sweet 16, they had done remarkable things at Loyola. But just seeing from 1 through 12, it was 13 players. You got 12 guys who I wouldn't be surprised if they were coaches at some point in their career. Extremely high IQ, extremely smart, loved the game, really worked at it every single day. So just to see that culture, just kind of like gave me added confirmation that you do not need to sacrifice character for you to have the team and have the success that you hope to have. And that stuck with me everywhere that I've been. I try to make sure just the same. And that's why I'm aligned with Coach Barnes. I don't like recruiting guys that have low character. I don't like recruiting guys who don't have the right edge and have the right DNA and care about the right things. You know what I mean? The people that I want to make sure that I'm helping or bringing into the program have the correct makeup. I think those things are important. So just aside from the talent and aside from the skill, when I'm going to watch a game and I'm evaluating the game, I'm looking at the body language that the kid has on the floor, off the floor, on the sideline, you know, in timeouts, how they're uplifting their teammates. And it's crazy to say, man, like I try to tell our guys, like, you got to play the game within the game. Like sometimes you can trick somebody into thinking that, hey, man, you're this high energy, hard playing guy by just showing emotion. You know what I mean? So I'm evaluating just everything. And then on top of that, man, we're doing a very thorough background check. We're doing real intel. And you have to now because you're investing real money into these young players and you can't afford to bring somebody into your organization that isn't about the right things, right? Working for Mark Madsen, that was one thing that I loved that we did. Coach Madsen is incredible when it comes to putting together like checklists and things like that. Like him being in the NBA, one thing I learned from him was efficiency. He talked about we used to have a flip Saunders checklist. Like when we go out there and we got to explain our drill, we got to be extremely organized in our drill, right? Those are things that we had to do. But not only that, we felt that first go round, maybe we missed on a couple things when it came to character. So moving forward, like we had a checklist that we had to do, right? Like we were very thorough. We had to call multiple coaches and do real research and making sure that we're asking how much do they love the game? How much do they love to work? How do they handle adversity? All of these things that are important to make sure that you're doing everything you can on your end to make a sound decision. You know what I mean? So when you do, there's always going to be something, whether it's good or bad, you're going to be surprised with, but you don't want to be like shocked by bringing somebody into the program and you had no idea that they possess these type qualities that could be detrimental to maybe your success that you might not even be able to recover from at some point. So, you know, that's not only, I think I got a good eye to evaluate talent, but I think I've really grown in my career with paying attention to how important the character piece is.
You are an investigator.
Yeah, I know that.
Like overall, because you have to your point, you have to dig, you have to call, you're talking to their mom, their dad. A lot of times if you do house visits, we obviously don't have the budget to be able to fly out across the country and do house visits and all that. But like you have to see where the family comes from. Talk to the coach, not only talk to the coach. Sometimes if they're in high school, talk to some of their teachers. How do they treat this guy? How do they treat this person? And it's like you're digging into you have so many conversations just to find out if one kid is worth it.
Absolutely.
And that's just one recruit. Then you hear one bad thing. You're like, push this kid aside. I'll say real quick, not a full story, but like, there was a kid I was recruiting. I was a GA at a Division III school. Okay. This was years ago. And this kid, 6'8", shoot the crap out of it. We're like, I immediately, as a young coach, I'm like, I found our answer. We're gonna kill this conference. I promise you, like, this is him. He came in on a tour. Kid had headphones in, talking the whole time. And it was just like, my coach immediately goes, no. And I'm like, this kid's going to kill it for us. He goes, no, this isn't happening. So we end up turning the kid away. We ended up winning the conference that year. And then he told me after, he goes, he broke it down as to why, all the little things that he did. He really didn't actually care. He was all about himself. And I didn't see any of it as a young coach. I didn't see any of that.
For sure.
I'm like, wow, okay. Yeah, and that was my, like, I started to understand it. So that's great information.
No, it is, man. I love you said that, Amaro, is that I like to tell young coaches, never skip the custodian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're doing background and you know, you visit the school or whatever it is, never skip the custodian. Never.
That's real.
Because that's the one guy, and there's several people in this list of individuals that we're talking about. But if there's one person that has value in their opinion on a kid, and that person has no chance whatsoever to influence this kid's future.
Yep.
You're just getting facts and reality. And sometimes they roll their eyes and say, oh, that kid, you're kind of like, okay, all right. Yep. I don't know. Maybe we should just file this away. Yep. Or they gush over the kid.
Yep.
Right? Because the kid always puts the key back after if they let him shoot over the weekend.
Yep.
Or the kid says, hey, how you doing, Mr. Johnson, today? And says it to this guy every day that has no impact whatsoever on their future.
For sure.
But they're just treating this person the right way because that's what you're supposed to do.
For sure.
And then how many people in their background can you find that just keep saying the same things over and over, right?
Yep.
And then that's when you really know, all right, this person's one of us.
Absolutely. And
the best part of what has happened to you in your past, and I hope people don't miss it, you were a bit of a gatekeeper at Idaho State from a standpoint of there's a reason why you were hosting on these recruiting visits. Now, it may have been, you know how to get everybody into the club.
Enough
spots in town. Like, yo, we got three right here. My man's working the door. So that's a talent in itself. So I'm not. But my point is, you knew when a guy left campus at Idaho State, is like, he's one of us or he's not.
Absolutely.
You knew that.
Absolutely.
So now you're just running that back as a coach, right? That same instinct, those same little gut twinges that you used to get when a guy was on a visit, when you're hosting as a player, you're just running that back as a coach. And now it's obviously more refined now because there's a lot more levels to it as opposed to just, can this guy play or is he going to fit our locker room? There's other things.
Yep.
But man, what a great intro you had to what you're doing now. Back then, and obviously having won, you get to understand that this guy on the visit's about winning as well.
Yep. And I've been lucky all the way around. That's one thing I can say. Early in my career, I look at myself as an investor in people. A huge reason why I do what I do is because I have a real passion for helping others and giving back and making a difference. And the dude that I worked for at Henderson State, Jimmy Elgis, he was a longtime assistant coach, Division I assistant for 23 or 24 years before he decided he wanted to be a head coach for the first time. And it just happened to be at the Division II level. And I was his first assistant, and he was trying to create his own culture. And he was just the same. He cares about his players. He cares about people. He cares about his coaches. And he put me through the ringer on teaching me this and teaching me that, taught me how to recruit, really how to recruit, not just threw me out there in the fire, put things out in front of me, gave me tasks, helped correcting me, gave me great feedback when things didn't go well, taught me how to scout, taught me how to game plan. And I'm fortunate enough that I tell people all the time, he sharpened me as much as anybody that I've ever worked for. That dude's incredible. And I would say there's been several young coaches that have gone on to be head coaches that worked for him. And there's another that's right now is assistant in Memphis. He's done an awesome job. And we still talk to him rather frequently. He reaches out to me all the time asking for potential candidates whenever he has turnover. And that's another thing I take pride in is, and this is for all the young coaches out there. I love the fact that in my career, that the dudes that I work for, they still have their jobs. Like, I take pride in it. I've been doing this 13 years now, and Jimmy Elgis, I was his first assistant. He's still there. Ryan Wall, he had tons of success. Now he's an AD. It wasn't because of winning. He was able to hire one of our former players. You know what I mean? And you talk about Richie, who as good of a coach as any young coaches there is out there in the country right now. He's had sustained success at South Alabama, and he's done that with, to be honest, not a ton of NIL, which has been really cool to see and witness. And so I take pride in that. And I think that all the young coaches should. Like, you should want to help those that have helped you and give you an opportunity. and not thinking that just because you've had some success and you've done some good things that it's about you, because trust me, it's not. It's always going to be bigger than you. These programs and universities are going to be around to the test of time. So like making sure you keep the main thing and trying to help those that have helped you. And that's the guy that gave you that opportunity for sure.
Oh man.
If there's anything to just stand up on stage, drop the mic and walk away, that was
Man, you just put this pod through the uprights on that one, man. You're a 65 yarder. That was beautiful. We can't have enough of that in our business. Our business needs that. As we sit here today, our business needs injection of that, and we can't have too many people. That's why I text Kenny Blakeney a couple months ago after the tournament, and I said our business needs 50 more of you.
Yep.
We just can't have that enough because kids are going to benefit. That's why I'm saying that. Saying that because more coaches will get more opportunities because of that.
For sure.
Players are going to benefit by having more people in our game like that. So loving that.
For sure.
Great stuff. No, Coach Morgan, we say it all the time, but truly, anytime someone's able to give us the time, I know this is a busy time for you. I know you got some stuff going on the rest of today. So just being able to take some time and hop on here, chop it up, talk some hoops, be able to give back to the coaches, young coaches, even the experienced coaches that would love to be in your shoes someday. Thank you, because it really does, not only just for us, mean a lot, but it also, like I said, for the people listening, I know a lot of people are going to get some great information. If they didn't, then they probably didn't have this.
Shame on them.
they were on mute the whole time and didn't hear it or something.
Yeah, they had something else was definitely not as important.
That was great.
If they missed out on this, man, this was solid gold, man. And again, just your journey, and then obviously where you are now, it's always a huge blessing in our profession when you can wake up every day and feel like you're where you're supposed to be.
Absolutely.
You know, amen. So that's not always the case in our business. So being able to say that and being at a place where everybody in the building's about the right things, that's special.
Rare.
So,
it's rare. It's special.
It is. That's why winning is hard too. So just for the same reasons. We appreciate you, man. This was awesome.
I really appreciate you. This was incredible. Thank you for having somebody like me on your pod, man. This is big time for me. So thank you again. We'll be in touch. I really appreciate you.
No doubt. No. And thank you all for being on here and listening, tuning in to another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, and again, we will say your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working. You coaches, keep rising. Have a good rest of your summer. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.
Are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.